Welcome to the Low Carb MD podcast. No one is beyond help. No one is beyond hope.
As we have always said, we are bringing you medical information and cutting edge science, but none of this is medical advice. Please seek out input from your own doctor.
Hello and welcome back to the Low Carb MD podcast. Tro, we have an old friend back.
Oh my God. I think she's
off the ground.
I think she actually, the guest today has more, I think she's got more appearances on the podcast, just as many as Jason Funk.
Oh my goodness.
Just as many as Jason Funk. So we're happy to have her back for the third time. This is Joy Kitty. If you haven't heard her first two podcasts, go back and listen to them. And we're so delighted to have you back. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours. And if you haven't checked out her blog, please, please, please go check it out. And if you haven't checked out her book, Low Carb Breads of the World, I got that one right, right? Low Carb Breads of the World. And her site is lchf-rd.com. And she's her, I mean, we got to watch the book evolve, which was awesome. You know, because we saw I've shared all, you know, kind of the recipes with my patients, and it's awesome to see this book evolve and become, you know, I know it's going to be a resource. Brian, how many times have you heard people say, I love low carb, but I need to find a way to manage bread?
Bread is it blocks it. That's a bit, for me, that was a big block. I'm like, sourdough bread. Oh my goodness. What am I going to do without sourdough bread? And then you kind of start changing your lifestyle. Then it changes. And then a lot of the low carb breads were not that great. So you go, okay, I just don't even need bread. Like I'm eating like a sponge cake here. I want to have like the protein sparing bread. I don't care who you are. I haven't been thrilled by any bread. Maybe Joy will change my opinion on this.
Well, I was in the same place. I had clients coming to me who could not live without bread. And I've been doing this, I mean, 4 years or whatever, and I just got used to not eating bread. I didn't care. But there were three sets of people that ended up being the impetus to me starting to design these breads. One were clients that I had that could not live without bread. They just could not, they would rather not adopt the low carb diet and stay diabetic or stay with metabolic disease, then give up bread. And, you know, then there's a food addiction aspect of things, which becomes a whole other issue. But a large percentage of my clients are either Southeast Asian or Hispanic. And they're from bread-centric cultures. You can't tell people, and a lot of them are Chinese. You could say, okay, well, you could try cauliflower rice. No self-respecting Chinese is going to eat cauliflower rice and say that's the same as rice. Same thing with what existed for Southeast Asians. There were low-carb tortillas out there, chapatis out there made with coconut flour or, you know, almond flour. But there's two sets of problems. One, when you try to bend them, they break. So you couldn't eat like a Southeast Asian with them. Second of all, there's a lot of people who can't tolerate almond flour or coconut flour because they have nut allergies. So people started introducing into them gar gum and xanthan gum and inulin. And then you have a whole bunch of people who are having gut issues because they have all these gums in them. And I was like, this isn't acceptable to just tell people from bread-centric cultures, well, sorry, you just can't live as a Southeast Asian or as a Hispanic. You'll just have to do without it. And so I started messing around with creating, well, the first one I did was very self-centered. I wanted to create a challah for Friday night when my family came over.
By the way, can I tell you that recipe I think you use a mold, right?
No, that's braided by hand.
Oh my, I thought you used a mold for that. I got to be honest with you. I have shared that recipe because we have a big Orthodox population. I have shared that recipe with so many people.
That is not a mold. As a matter of fact, in the book, I have pictures on how to do the four braids. No, that there's no molds.
I thought that was a mold for the law. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought that was a mold. That was my mistake. But I think I saw that on your blog 2 years ago or something. And this is what I said off air. We saw that kind of book evolve, you know, as we paid attention to your blog, which is such an awesome resource. I've used that recipe with so many patients.
I that was the one that got me started. And it was a nightmare because I had never worked with these ingredients before. And they're very different than ingredients. This is a totally different kind of book. Low Carb Breads of the World is not like any other low carb recipe book or bread recipes out there. There's no nut flours, there's no psyllium husk, there's no inulin, gargums, and there's no date whites. But Les Maria and Merck's Heart, her breads meet the needs of many, many people. But you can't make chapatis or roti or tortillas out of them, and you can't make a challah either. So I wanted to make something. Now, as you folks know, I used to be a very overweight dietitian. I was a foodie. I'm still a foodie. I do it a different way now. I wanted to make low carb available to people who would not give up bread. I wanted to make it available to people from bread center cultures, and I wanted to make it available to people with nut allergies. And so that's what I succeeded in doing. And there's not only breads in it. I've got Southern style baking powder biscuits that are to die for. My friend from Texas, who taught me how to bake real baking powder biscuits, she would absolutely freak if she tasted these because they're low carb, they're flaky, they're a little bit denser than a traditional, you know, Southern baking biscuit. But hey, look, I don't know if I've got the macros here. I printed out a few of them. Yeah. My baking powder biscuits, one of them for carbs has 6.7 grams of carbs and 22.4 grams of protein. One. A regular baking powder biscuit is the exact opposite. It has 27 grams of carbs and 4.2 grams of protein. I made English muffins. You know Thomas's English muffins? Here in Canada, we can't get them. But when I used to go to the States,
I used to live on those as a kid.
Oh my gosh, me too. Back in the day. Oh.
I made them, but I didn't just make the regular ones. I made their sourdough version. And these things are amazing. And you can make egg McMuffins. I think I've got the macros for those here too. I printed out, yeah. An egg McMuffin. Just the muffin part, made low carb, just that part, has 4.8 grams of carbs and 18.5 grams of protein. That's before you put the cheese and the, you know, bacon and the egg in. Oops. Oh yes. And a real one has 30 grams of carbs and 17 grams of protein. So, yeah, the naan, same thing. I mean, these naan, they're not perfect. I've made real naan. They're not 100% perfect. You could put up the slide for that one if you want to, but
yeah, I gotta find it. I saw the egg McMuffin. I was like, go ahead. Sorry, Brian.
We gotta interrupt because people love when we interrupt each other, apparently.
We were just talking about that. I don't know. They got mad at Joy for interrupting, they got mad at us. Brian, I've gotten a lot of hate mail for interrupting.
Me too.
I was being so rude. They couldn't listen to the podcast because we were just like, you know, going back and forth the way we usually do. And
when you're old friends, that's how it works. We just talk. People talk. I don't say, okay, Tro, I'm going to give you 13 seconds and then I'm going to wait 18 seconds and then we're going to talk. We get excited about stuff. Sorry, everyone. We get a little carried away. But Joy, I'm frustrated because I'm trying to find your book right now. You probably gave Tro. Tro always gets copies.
So it's
and I can just order it there.
Brian, I'm going to send it to you. It's awesome.
All one word, .com.
So it's low carb dash bread.
Dash bread. Yeah, yeah. Singular, okay. Not plural. Low carb, one word, hyphen bread, period.com. And right. There's videos on there with all the breads. You can just look at them and there's no molds. Everything's made by hand. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm still in this brace because I ended up with, what do they call it? Dirk Hervé's.
The carvings.
For kneading breads like for 3 months writing.
Wow. Awesome.
That's why there's no sourdough bread in the book. That was the next one. I was working on it and the doctor said, no more kneading breads. You can't knead breads.
Wow. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, Brian, I'm sorry. I should have sent it. It's a great book. Awesome, awesome book.
Yeah, I was trying to buy it on Amazon. It's not on. I was like, dang it.
You can go to the website and download it. Like, you could pay on the website and download it that day.
Awesome. Very cool.
And it's secure behind a firewall. And
So non-bread. So that's really cool. There's, you know, being able to do that, because, you know, a lot of the Middle Eastern, they have great meat, but then you're like, oh, okay, hold the rice. And then the bread is like
pita bread. Seriously. My daughter-in-law is from Israel. She wanted to eat shish tauk and kebabs in a pita bread. And like, I wouldn't eat regular pita bread. And she makes pita bread by hand. And I made pita bread by hand. And my three sons, one of them being her husband, were like, this was before, as I was writing the book, they said, Mom, this is amazing. And you can like open it up and put things inside and you can roll things. And it's got that mouthfeel and texture. It's crazy. Like, I never set out to do this, but I couldn't not do it, because what it does is it makes low carb available to people who wouldn't give up bread, who are from cultures who, you know, it's part of their culture to sit with their family and eat bread, eat with their hands. The very essence of what a meal is to share bread, to break bread together. Break bread together.
You know, one of the things that makes any diet difficult, no matter what diet you do, enjoy, I think you taught me this, was, you know, that feeling of deprivation, right? So if, you know, how do you manage changing your life without feeling deprived? Now, we know, all of us have been changing our lifestyle for many years. So we don't feel deprived anymore. We don't have those strong cravings. We don't, you know, the cravings get better. As the further you distance yourself from something that's addictive, it gets easier and easier to manage, right? But people just starting out, if you ask them why they fail, Brian, what do they say? They say, feelings of deprivation. I don't know how to manage social situations. I don't know how to manage holidays, right? Mm-hmm. And so this tackles that, right? Being able to get somebody, something that relates to them culturally, something that caters to their food preference. I think ultimately, it's a less harm approach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
There's
a less
a beautiful
harm approach.
Quote that I put at the beginning of the book, which I don't have available unless I brought it up. It's from the late Adele Haidt, and she posted it a month before she died. And it was in a discussion in a closed clinicians group. And I posted about the breads, and some of the people were giving me a hard time because, you know, you're just feeding into people's addictions and whatever. And she talked about how we're not just machines that eat nutrients, that we are part of families that share food around a table, and that this makes that available. And that is actually the introductory quote in the book.
Yeah, and that's a big deal, you know, being sensitive to people's cultural uniqueness, and being kind of realistic when they're first starting those journeys. Is, I think it's really important, you know, if we could all, you know, have just a little bit of salt and meat and water and be fine, I think we all would. But, when you're like, and now most
without Brits.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like that now, but, you know, I remember early on, it was really tough to go from the standard diet. I don't know, Brian, how about you? Was it tough for you?
Yeah. You know, just talking to Joy, when you're saying that, I remember a lot of mornings with those, you know, the English muffin with some peanut butter melted and a little bit of jelly on there, you know, and go, dang, that's right.
Dude, I just made low-carb blueberry jam this morning, and I was thinking, I need some of my English muffins to toast and put some grass-fed butter melted in and a little bit of those. We can do it now, and it's high-protein, low-carb. It's not cheating, although, quite honestly, for people who have food addiction, I don't recommend that they go there. If they have a food addiction to bread, this may not help them in long-term recovery. But if people don't have food addiction, or they don't have gluten intolerance, or they don't have inflammatory disease where they need to stay away from gluten, these things, you got to check out the English muffins, and they're not hard to make, and they're sourdough.
Yeah, and I think the point is, it's not the point of the very valid point. The addiction can lead you down the road. Like if you're a bread addict and you have one piece of sourdough bread you haven't had in 10 years, like if you haven't had a drink in 10 years, don't go and have a low alcohol drink, right? So some people, it's going to lead them down the path, and it's for us to figure out. None of us can figure it out. It's for ourselves. We figure out, oh yeah, if I do that, it screws me up, and I think about bread all day, and I can't stop. And you know, some people can have a low carb cookie, and then, you know, they can't stop. And other people have one once a month, and they're fine, and that works. And some people, it's a bridge saying, okay, I'm not ready to give up my sourdough, but if I can make a low carb option, I'll start with that, and then over time, they maybe not crave it as so much. So it goes both ways. But I think the important thing that you're both touching on is the cultural aspect. So if I'm from India and I want to have naan bread, and it's a huge, my family says, forget it, I'm not doing it because I can't have bread. Sure. Then you say, well, we could still sit together and let's make this bread together, or having the smell of bread in your house, you know, things like that. It's just over the holidays, if you're having some low carb chili and you want to have a little piece of bread with that just to top it off. And the other thing is convenience factor of, you know, I always get my hamburgers wrapped in lettuce, and it's a hassle. Yeah. Sometimes you get mustard all over your hand or whatever. And you're like, okay, if I can have a low carb bread and I'll just enjoy it every now and again, that's cool.
There's a low carb hamburger that's actually an offshoot of the challah roll, because I happen to like a brioche type bun with my hamburgers. And so there's one in the book. It's easy to make, you make them 12 at a time. You cool them, you slice them, you stick them in a Ziploc bag in the freezer, and you just pull them out when you need them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another big deal, preparation, right? Mm-hmm. All these things you guys are hinting at, you know, the community aspect of how we eat, the cultural aspects of how we eat, how important it is to be able to cater to that. And then, you know, preparation, like, you know, if you're going to make a lifestyle stick, hey, make some of these, put them in the freezer, and then you're prepared no matter what. You know, you can bring it with you to a holiday, get fresh bread, everybody can enjoy it. And it's a little bit lower glycemic, and makes it easier. It makes it easier. And I think, you know, I think I read a tweet from you, or I don't know where it was, that you've already sold 1,000 copies, which is just fantastic.
Just under 1,000 copies in 25 countries.
Yeah, that's amazing.
25 different countries. As a matter of fact, you go to the webpage, like a plug again, low carb, one word, -bread.com. There's a map of the countries where people have bought from. You could, yeah, and it's updated when the new country comes on with the flag. And I'm blown away. I've got Saudi Arabia and Nepal and 5 provinces in India and different places in South America and Scotland and Ireland and the United Arab Emirates, and yeah, it's nuts. I freak out. Like, I knew there'd be an interest in the US and Canada and Australia, because that's where I had no idea that people around the world would be getting these books and able to order the ingredients. I mean, in India, it's very easy to order a lot of the ingredients, because actually a lot of these, and they're special, very different than other kinds of bread. A lot of them are manufactured in India. So here's one of the most bread-centric cultures in the world who have no problem on to order it, like I do here in Canada. I had to buy it off of Amazon. Anywhere, because these ingredients are available. And the people from Indian cultures and Hispanic cultures are often multi-generational. They live in one home together, and the grandmother does the cooking, and they're teaching the elders how to make these low-carb breads, and the elders are making them for their family. They're eating too, and people are getting healthy in countries like India that have some of the highest rates of type 2 diabetes in the world. This thrills me. As a dietitian, I'm helping people just by making bread book. This is crazy. This is really, like,
it's an important
thing I plan to do. It just happened.
But it's really important too, because, you know, we had Italian Goes Keto on, right? And he was talking about that when he first said, hey, I'm not going to eat pasta and bread. And they looked at him like, what? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you dying? This is crazy. But he said, look, it's about sitting around the table and sharing. Like, we don't have to eat the bad stuff. And so now his family is starting to pick up what he does, and like they're making low carb versions of stuff, and everyone can enjoy it, and they're getting healthier, and they're coming off their diabetes medicines, you know. But it's such a huge jump for a lot of families. So I think that's one of the low points. I've had people tell me, look, doc, if I can't eat bread, I'll die a couple years earlier.
I had lots of clients like this. Matter of fact, there was one client in particular that was really the impetus to me changing my mind about low carb breads. They were telling me, you know, can I eat carb on? And I was like, look, you know, and I was sort of like, whatever, like if it makes it easier for you to follow, you know, this lifestyle, eat carb on bread, bless carb on. I'm glad it's available for people. But honestly, I had never tried it until after my bread book came out. And I had my hand in a splint, and my son picked up some at Costco because I couldn't bake any. And we opened it up and he tasted it. This has texture, but has no taste. He says, Mama, how did people eat this stuff? It has no taste. And it has, you know, low carbs and high protein. But he says, Mama, it has no taste. Your breads actually taste like bread, and they have the smell and the texture and everything. So I never planned to do this, and I was against carbonate when it first came out because I thought, well, people aren't really going to adopt the, you know, a genuine low-carb lifestyle. No, they're actually going to be able to stay in a genuine low-carb lifestyle if they have a choice.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm just curious, have your clients, you know, you're a dietitian, master's degree in nutrition, you know, have your clients, you know, do you encourage a lot of bread making? Like, how do you approach?
I still teach the same way I did before, because I don't think in the long run, and you know, but let's be honest, Rosette has these absolutely fantastic, you know, cookies and cakes and all kinds of things for the same reason I have the breads. I don't encourage either of those things because I want people to learn to like real whole food.
Yeah, I agree.
The bread book, I think the number of clients I've mentioned to since the book came out is maybe 3. And they were clients, 2 of them were Southeast Asian, and they thought, how am I going to live without roti or chapati? Like, well, you don't have to. There's this if you want it. But I don't plug it as part of my practice because my focus is real whole food. And, you know, people want to buy treats to make and they're not allergic to, you know, nut flour. Rosette's is the perfect thing to say, you can buy this and these are really good. And, you know, but I don't actually even promote my own bread book. Because
yeah. And in Canada, there's Vicks, you know, I know a lot of people in Canada that can buy Vicks mix now, which is, I don't think he's even got nuts. I think it's like nut free, which is good, you know.
Actually has that flour in it. I'd love to team up with Vic and we can come out with something that's based my pizza recipe.
Your pizza recipe looks great. The macros look great. I saw that.
You know that my two addictions are bagels and pizza.
Yeah, I think that's why we got in trouble last time, because I think we had a little conflict about whether it was the New York bagel or the Toronto bagel
Montreal
or something.
Bagel. But Montreal. This pizza recipe, I think you probably have the screenshot there, but I have the macros here. I very selfishly made this pizza for myself. Maybe I don't have it.
So can I make this dough and freeze it and have it?
Oh, here it is. Crust only. The low carb version is 3.9 grams of carbs and 8.5 grams of fat for a slice. Carbs in one slice of, I use Domino's as an example. 31 grams of carbs.
That's just insane. Can you imagine that, Brian?
Is 95% like a real pizza. Brian, I'd love to team up with Vic and make this one into a mix because his has nut flours and people with nut flour allergies can't use it. I totally team up with him and use
I think he uses coconut. You know, Vic's here.
Coconut. I have clients who use this mix and I say, great, if you could, you know, if you're on a higher fat version.
But this is
people who are on the higher version, nut flours aren't going to cut it.
Yeah, and you can switch it back and forth, and you can make one of each. You could do whatever. You know, I'll tell you, when we make pizza,
I want to give people choices.
You know, Brian, I got to ask you a question. When I was in residency, that was my food to turn to. When I was in med school, it was like we were all studying. We would get Papa John's pizza or Domino's pizza or something like that. You know, when you were in residency and med school, did you have a food like that, or you weren't really?
Are you going to say like pizza wasn't invented yet when I was in med school and residency? Is that
that would have been a good joke? But I'd get hate mail for, you know, interrupting you. Probably
no, but that's the thing, right? Pizza. Let's take a pizza break. Let's order whatever. I think pizza is probably the easiest ones. Maybe Chinese food every now and again, but mostly it was probably pizza, right? Because it's convenient,
it's
easy. They deliver
like
it.
Papa John's, by the way. Papa John's was my pizza choice. This texture of mine is a lot like Papa John's.
So I have to come clean on this, Tro, because my wife, you know, she'll make rosettes. She'll make one rosettes crust and one with sausage crust. And I'm partial to the rosettes crust. So maybe Joy will take some business away from you at my house. I have to try it to see.
That's all right.
But I have to make it.
There's a lot of room to go around.
There's room for everybody. There's room for Maria to do what Maria does best. There's room for Rosette to do what Rosette does best. There's room for, you know, if it wasn't for Vic, I wouldn't have even started making some of the Middle Eastern breads. One of the bread recipes in the book, which is the manakish, is based on these ingredients. But the first manakish I made was Vic's one that he gave me the recipe for. So it's room for everybody.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Different types of low-carb diets. Some people want high fat, some people want high protein, some people want, you know, protein sparing, modified fast. There's room for all of it. It's giving people choices.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm just curious. So you, in general, it sounds like you're, by the way, just so you know, Brian, I'm partial to the sausage crust. Okay. I'm partial.
Yeah, sausage crust is really
filling.
I love
the sausage crust.
Yeah, you know? They're both really good, I have to admit. But it's nice to have both. Like, to have one of each and try it, and, you know, but you get full really quickly.
I got to be honest. There's something about the meat that I just get full quicker. I don't know what it is. Almond flour, you know, and coconut flour. I can eat more. I don't know what it is, but I can eat more.
And I found I was gaining weight when, like, on my low carb website, I still have the coconut flour pizza recipe, which I used to use, but I would eat too much. This is very hard to eat too much because it's very high in protein. So there's that limiting where your body has a receptor to limit the amount of protein because, you know, your body could only process so much. I can eat two pieces of this. I'm full. But it's not a meat. It's not pizza. It's actually pizza.
So how many times did you screw up to get your recipes? Is that why you're...
No, I think the first one I made was the multi-grain one, which is, by the way, I don't know if it's too late to mention it, but I sent a PDF with a free download for your subscribers, a 27-page about the book with a free recipe in it, and the multi-grain recipe is in there. That one took probably 12 tries to get it because I was working with these ingredients that I never worked with before. And how it came about is there's this bread from Germany, a high protein bread called Mettmachers or something, protein bread, and using that as a bread substitute. And I looked at the ingredients and said, this can't be that hard to make. Huh. So I ordered the ingredients, which were the basic ingredients that I started with, that this multigrain bread recipe that's in the free download were those ingredients that I put. It took probably 12 tries to make it, but when I made it, I was like, whoa, this, I knew I was onto something, and it started with that. Then I made baguettes, and then I said, the challah, and then it was like, oh, I've got to make, and it just snowballed from there, and I joined a professional baking group that where it's bread bakers from around the world, and they share techniques and the science of bread making. And I had to learn about, you know, the rheology of making bread, because there was a lot of science that had to go into making these work. And then it didn't require so many tries to make the recipes. And that's the idea. I want people to this is recipe book. I want people to learn to work with the ingredients and take their family recipes and make them low carb. The recipes are examples mm-hmm. of different types. There's like even a cinnamon roll that's to die for. But I want people to take these and go to their nana's recipe or their grandma's recipe or their bubby's recipe or, you know, and take recipes that have been in their family for generations and make them low carb. This will teach them how to do it.
Yeah, really cool. Because you have the base and you go, okay, well, add some olives in or sun-dried tomatoes or whatever you like with your family culture, right?
Change the recipe entirely. Say, you know what? This bread dough, if I did X, Y, and Z to it, I could make this, you know, Swedish New Year's cake, or I could, and things that are not in the book, they will work with these ingredients and remember things that they grew up on that they could take that as a basis. And once they know how to work with the ingredients and how it's very different than working with, you know, almond flour or regular baking. I mean, I baked bread for 30 years. I got fat for a reason. I used to bake bread from scratch for years. Once they learn how to work with these ingredients, there's nothing stopping people from making sourdough bread or Swedish bread or rusks or all sorts of the bagels. Bagels was going to be on my list to make, but my hand prevented it. I'd love it if someone would, even what? If it was a New York bagel, I would forgive them.
You know, well, now people don't understand that reference. I think Brian mentioned it. There was a huge... huge little debate on whether a New York City bagel or Montreal bagel. I think we ended up saying New York City was better, but I don't remember quite clearly.
I was outnumbered.
Yeah, but it's awesome. It's great to know that you're still kind of evangelizing for this community, for this way of eating.
And trying new things, right? Trying new things and see what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, I think it's fun and all your experience. Now, I have to ask you, do you recommend a bread maker or doing it in the oven, or how's the best way to do this thing?
I did it all by hand, which is how I ended up with Dirk Hervé's Tino Sinovitis. But I also have tried them in my KitchenAid mixer for doing the kneading, and they work out great. I use the paddle for mixing it up, and then I use the bread hook for kneading. But the reason I did them by hand is I wanted people around the world to know that they could be made by hand. But yes, I know someone actually who makes the multigrain bread in a bread maker. They just do it in a slightly different order, but it works really well. I don't have a bread maker. I never wanted one, but I use my KitchenAid stand mixer for doing the mixing and the kneading. And the only thing obviously you can't use it for is things like baking powder biscuits, but a food processor for cutting in the butter works great. So all of them can be adapted to stand mixers. But I wanted particularly because I knew that people from different cultures would be interested and people from different backgrounds who may not necessarily have the access to special equipment. Every single bread in the book is made by hand. Can be made by hand. It can be made any way people want to adapt it to make it easy.
Yeah, I think this is a huge resource, you know, and I just gotta say thank you for your blog, thank you for what you do. I know this is going to be helpful to people to kind of at least get started or sustain their journeys. And the other thing I've kind of, you know, following you on, if you follow Joy, you kind of saw this book evolve over time. Her recipes have been great, her resources have been great. But the you know, also on social media lately, I've noticed that you've been sharing, besides about the book, you know, your own health journey lately, and that took a turn. Do you want to just talk about that just a bit?
I'd love to. I call it a dietitian's journey part two. My dietitian's journey part one was from March 5th, 2017 to March 5th, 2019, where I lost 55 pounds and 12 inches off my waist and put my type 2 diabetes and hypertension into remission. And maintained it for the following year and a half or whatever. I didn't realize why it took me twice as long to lose the weight as all my clients do. My clients lose the same amount of weight in half the time. It turns out I've been hypothyroid for close to a decade, subclinical hypothyroid that ended up in June. It was my youngest son's wedding, and I ended up posting the pictures where I look the absolute worst and was my absolute sickest for two reasons. One, it was therapeutic to me because I was so ashamed of what it looked like. And I looked as fat as I did when I was 55 pounds heavy. I've posted the pictures side by side of what I look like June 3rd of this year and what I look like March 5th, 2017. And they're indistinguishable. And there's a 60 pound difference in my weight. I was very close to a myxedema crisis.
Can I tell people a little bit of what that is? Okay, so what you guys need to understand, what Joy is describing, is something we see very often in hypothyroidism. Okay, it becomes very difficult. So whether the thyroid's attacked because of autoimmune disease or whether the thyroid's attacked because you had radiation, number of other reasons for the thyroid to stop making that hormones or specific hormones, what happens is the whole body kind of lowers its resting metabolic energy, the powerhouse of the entire body, that goes away, right? And that thyroid hormone powers a lot of different things in the body, including the heart rate, the blood pressure, the metabolism. And when those thyroid hormones drop, right, for a long time, there's a feedback to the brain. The brain makes more thyroid stimulating hormone, TSH, and that number increases and increases. And as the brain is trying to send the signal to the thyroid to say, make more thyroid hormone, if I remember correctly from med school physiology, you get more mucin production, which is exactly the basis for myxedema coma. The eyes get puffy, the face gets bigger.
Legs get super swollen. I have pictures in the blog post. I started posting the pictures of what it looks like, but mucin is a polysaccharide that they use hyaluronic acid, you know, to inject people to get rid of wrinkles. Well, this is what it is. It's made of that.
And as this process is happening, right, as this process, you know, you're gaining weight, you feel miserable, you feel really sluggish and slow, and it can be insidious because it's been happening over months. You're just like, this is how I feel. Until somebody's like, hey, you look different, or, you know, you go to a doctor, and usually it's picked up when we check that TSH. And, you know, another hallmark is if you check somebody's reflexes when they're when they're in that state of really low thyroid, it'll be very sluggish reflexes. So, Brian, did I miss anything?
We hit our knees with these little hammers. That was way before you were born, Tro, but these little triangular hammers they used to hit our knees with, that's apparently what it was for.
Yeah, no, I mean, that exactly. I mean, it's one of the things you look for is hypothyroidism. Now you're really making, I feel old though, but but you're making me feel young. Brian, did I miss anything on hypothyroidism?
No, I think, you know, those amazing hair thinning, nails messed up, you know, just not feeling great, mood stuff. There's a lot of stuff that, you know.
If people want to read more, I actually have written some science made simple articles. There's two of them under the low carb, healthy fat, RD, food for thought tab, written from a first-person perspective under the dietitian's journey. And on my BBD website, which is bbdnutrition.com, stands for Better by Design Nutrition, I've written five articles to date that are referenced all about what hypothyroidism is. And I posted pictures of myself, because when you go to medical journals, they only show you what people look like when they're in the condition. I've had several physicians online and pharmacists say they've never seen what people look like before, and then when they have it, and then when it's resolved and they found my pictures, and these are people who've been doctors for 35 years, they had no idea. I put my picture from June 3rd and September 3rd side by side, and it looks like I've lost 60 pounds. I didn't. I just went on
medication. How was it? So how is it diagnosed? So you're seeing, so what did you feel now that we kind of talked about what hypothyroidism is and what myxedema is? Can you tell me, which is the end stage of hypothyroidism, can you tell me what you experienced and like what it was like kind of from your perspective?
I'll tell you what it was like to be at my son's wedding. I'll tell you what it was like not to be able to walk on the beach for the family pictures and to need my sons to help me. I couldn't get in and out of a car without help. I couldn't get in and out of a chair without help. I couldn't carry my son's present. I was an officiant at the wedding and they had to hold me.
I mean,
my hair.
This sounds like really severe. How did it, so you're suffering, and how does it get picked up? I mean,
honestly, Tro, my doctor was away until he was away on vacation for a month, and they only had a locum there. If I could have seen one of his colleagues, I would have done that, but that wasn't an option. I did what I tell people not to do. I self-managed it until he came back. And he saw me but 3 weeks after the wedding. I had already started on desiccated thyroid extract. I had listened to some medical webcasts by a very well-known endocrinologist, MD, PhD from New York, and looked at his dosage recommendations and started on a supplement at half the dose and half the rate as what he does, because I had no doctor supervision until I could see my own doctor. And my own doctor said that probably, well, you know, 20 to 60% of people, once they go into mixed edema crisis, don't survive even once they're hospitalized. Chose to keep me on that medication because I was doing so well. And it's only this past week that I went to him and said, look, if I have to go to a hospital or go to the States for a conference, I actually need a pharmaceutical prescription that I can, you know, have rather than weighing out desiccated thyroid extract. And he understood. And so now I'm on Synthroid and Cytomel in the same ratios as the desiccated thyroid. And I'm going to be on that for the next 4 to 6 weeks, and then check my levels, and we'll play with from there. But if I hadn't self-treated, I would have been in a lot worse shape. And
so what sounds like
doctor after 2 years of COVID, and they've got gangrene in their leg, and they need to have their leg amputated.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, you know, during the COVID, lack of access to care, a lot of different things, and maybe these insidious nature, you kind of don't know. What was the point where you're like, I got to go see the doctor now, like something is off?
The first article I wrote is about how I thought a lot of the symptoms were just me getting older, and my son thought the same thing. It was things like joint pain, muscle pain, something, it looked like bruising in my ankle. It turned out to be purpura. It's almost gone. I've had it for a year, and the articles talk about that. Most of the things, I had COVID twice. And at first, both my doctor and I thought these were symptoms from post-COVID. The joint pain, the muscle pain, the brain fog, the tiredness. And I was meeting with my doctor online the same way everybody else does. And, you know, you don't have that in-person access. And it was only once I had symptoms that were no longer consistent with what could be long COVID that I started to think there's something else going on here. And I started reading the literature.
Yeah. It's funny. We oftentimes attribute, it's tough to even as a clinician, like you're like, nobody thinks like, oh, this is going on, you know, is this long COVID? Is this, what is it? What's going on? And certainly access to a doctor can probably, you know, and just some blood work, you know, but doctors have been so swamped, stuff to get in, COVID, taking long overdue vacations, this, that, and the diagnosis is missed. And it's a simple blood test could pick this up, a TSH level.
I looked back at my blood work for the last 9 years.
Yeah.
And he said, this has been going on for a while. And I wrote an article about that.
Wait, what? Can you tell me about this?
TSH has been 3.4 something, 3.3 something for 9 years.
Well, that's so 3.4 is at the higher end of where you'd expect it.
Higher end of normal, not even considered technically subclinical, but I'd already lost half my hair 4 years ago, and I was unable to lose weight at the same rate as everybody else. But here in BC, and there's an article about that on my BBD Nutrition website, if your TSH is in the normal range, they can't even test T4. You have to wait until you either have clinical symptoms or your TSH is above 10. So my doctor's hands were tied, even if I saw him, because my TSH was in the normal range. He couldn't do anything because of the way the government regulations are. It was only when I manifested symptoms that were not consistent with long COVID or aging that I could be tested. And at that point, I was almost in a myxedema crisis.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of practices, a lot of the big HMOs, TSH is their screening. That's it. So you could be in the throes of hypothyroidism, not check T3, T4, and not see what's happening. Because a lot of people, we see that they don't convert the T4 over to T3 and they're on huge doses of thyroid replacement and they're not any better. And then we tweak it a little bit.
There's a statistic today that 60% of people, and I want to do some research, 60% of people inefficiently convert T4 to T3.
Yeah, and especially if we go through a big, huge stress like COVID and all the lockdowns and everything we've been through.
Or have COVID. I had it twice.
And having COVID. All that. And you start looking and say, we're missing it like crazy. And because.
And did you know that both COVID and the COVID vaccine can initiate thyroiditis?
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's a spike protein that's an issue. And then autoimmune type stuff and hair loss.
They're going to come for us now.
I've got the references in the blog.
Yeah.
I'm not making it up. But in my case, I should mention.
Well, that doesn't matter.
COVID that caused it. And it wasn't the vaccines that caused it. I had a tumor on my thyroid 30 years ago, which was removed. And at the time, they said, as long as it was, because it was on the isthmus of the thyroid, of course, the thyroid's a butterfly-shaped thing, and the tumor was in the middle. They said, oh, your thyroid's fine because we didn't touch any of the thyroid. They now know that just the surgery, which was a 5 or 6 hour surgery, eventually causes the demise of the thyroid gland from the trauma to it. And that's probably what initiated by.
They're gonna, you know, they don't even need a reason anymore. Truth is censorable now. So, you know.
That's why I put references that. It could have been COVID. It could have been the vaccine, but I had a pre-existing condition.
They're already coming for Brian, you know, because in California, you can't even speak the truth. So, you know, it's fascinating. So do you mind if I ask? So you're kind of struggling for a bit. You had the surgery a while back. So, and you know, it's a little sluggish. What did it? You know, did it tick up that TSH really, or did you start treatment?
I didn't know about subclinical hypothyroidism until June.
Got it.
I saw my thyroid high end of normal, but it's still in the normal range. My doctor said it was fine. I said it was fine. I never looked any further. When I look back now at pictures of my second anniversary of recovering my weight loss, March 5th, 2021, I was already gaining, compared to the year before, I'd already gotten puffier. I remember getting dressed for that hike and finding the clothes difficult to put on, and there was no difference in my weight. Now I look back, I can see that this has been progressing over the last 2 years, like accelerating rapidly. And then just before my son's wedding, I didn't know, I had just gotten over COVID for the second time. But what was the clue for me is my daughter-in-law's mother is a nurse, and she lent me an oximeter, which is a little device you put on your finger to measure oxygen. And my son said, if your oxygen rate goes below this percent, you need to go to the hospital. Mine was always below that amount. That was the clue. Low temperature, poor temperature. That with the sweat, when I started having the edema in the legs and then the face. And I said, I knew then that it was thyroid, started looking into and try to get an appointment with my doctor, but he was away for a month.
That's amazing. So eventually you went on treatment and you're starting to feel better?
I self-treated, as I said, at half the dose and half the rate. Then when I went to see him, he was like, Joy, I don't want to put you on any pharmaceuticals. I want you to keep doing what you're doing. Let's check your blood work. Under his supervision, gradually titrated up. And as of 2 days ago, I started on a mixture of Synthroid and Cytomel. And yesterday was the first day that at 2 o'clock, I looked at 2 o'clock and I'm like, I'm not ready for bed. I did meal plans. I cooked supper. Came the evening and I was like, 7:30, I've been going to bed.
Brian's talked a lot about, the fact that as board certified internists, he's felt, and I agree with that, we don't have enough training on thyroid. And we've had some people talk about that, talk about thyroid, learn a lot. Amy Berger, I've learned a lot from her on thyroid and some other people. Brian, what do you think are the key things most of us docs are missing on thyroid management?
Number one, listening to your patient. Mm-hmm. Number one, listening to their symptoms. You go, this could be hypothyroid. Maybe you're not just depressed. Maybe, you're insomnia. I've seen a fair amount of people, once that we treat their thyroid, low thyroid, then all of a sudden they're sleeping perfect and they're calm and they feel better and they're not as emotional. So I think that's the big one is, and I think really looking at the subtypes and the, T3, T4, and whether they're on replacement or not, whether the replacement is appropriate, because if you're on T4 alone and your TSH looks normal, your T3 may be zero. It may be very low. And we've seen this discordance. So Amy Berger, I've reached out to her a couple of times. I go, what the heck is this? This is a crazy number I'm seeing. So having people that, understand it and have dealt with it themselves and understand, I have some patients tell me, look, I know what the normal value is, but here's where I feel well in this value range. So that's a little bit lower, a little bit higher, maybe, or on the upper end or the lower end, depending on their symptoms. So I think it's really just reassessing and following it. And I know I'm embarrassed to say I've missed it over all these years where people, when I look back and go, oh, she was probably hypothyroid 10 years ago, but we didn't look. We just looked at the TSH because that's all you order. And now you start realizing, talking to experts, we need more. There's more to the picture. It's just like, I can't just look at someone's LDL cholesterol in isolation and see if they're healthy or not.
Or look at their glucose and not look at their insulin. That's the comparison I've made. I looked at glucose for years. Looking at fasting glucose and fasting insulin tells us a whole different story.
Mm-hmm. A1C and insulin together, you say, oh, okay, now I know the picture. Now I know what's happening. But having one without the other, you really don't know.
It's like having a fisherman story, but it's a one hand, the fish was this big. How big was it?
Yeah, exactly right. You need all the information. And I'm not one for ordering a ton of tests. A lot of my patients are cash pay, so I try to minimize my testing. But I think the other part of the coin, Taro, that we miss a lot is hormonal stuff and menopausal stuff and gut microbiome stuff. There's a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. I think the more we're saying, okay, even if I don't have all the answers, I don't know what to do. At least I know if I take away the toxicity and get enough sleep and watch the stress, we can make some improvements. It may not be perfect. We may need to do more with the thyroid and hormones and things along those lines, but we can make a lot of difference just with not, drinking every night or being stressed out or fighting with our neighbor, or, arguing with people on Twitter, whatever. I think there's a lot of that we have to really step back and say, okay, it's the lifestyle. It's really going to be, are you at peace? Do you enjoy your family? Are you going home and maybe making bread sometimes together? I'm funny because I've downloaded your book. I'm ready to go. My wife and I have a new date night tonight. We're going to make some bread for our neighbors or something, Awesome. But it's kind of
one thing I'd like to add, and I think this is a side that I can speak into because I'm old. A lot of people assume that being forgetful and having achy joints and having achy muscles and brain fog and feeling tired at night and feeling cold is a natural part of aging. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's not a natural part of aging. You look at cultures like Okinawans from Japan or people from Nepal, they don't have these issues. If people have symptoms that are not a natural form of aging that they accept as a natural form of aging, they need to ask, where are these symptoms coming from? In my case, I wrote off a lot of it to COVID, but a lot of people write it off to aging. My kids, my three young adult sons, thought mama's just getting older. And now they see me and they're going, we thought you were ready for the old age home.
Wow.
At my son's wedding, I was. And then they look at me now. I just ran into my son and daughter a lot at the grocery store. And I'd seen them a week earlier and my daughter-in-law said, your face is so much less puffy. They thought it was aging. They thought the achy joints and not being able to get out of a car and the brain fog and the moodiness, the crying at the wedding and not being able to stop was just age.
Well, maybe you didn't have enough bread. Now you're making more bread, so maybe that fixed it.
Yeah. Bread and thyroid hormones can change a life. you know.
It has been life-changing. You know what's also tropes? We've had it on Twitter. You make these dietitians post it. I see not all dietitians. Well, people make disparaging comments about doctors. Doctors not being willing to do
tests. Oh, I love it. I love it.
But you know what? I've got to say, my physician, he's a GP. He's not an endo. He has totally supported me in this and how I've assessed it and what I've been doing. There are fantastic. He's been my doctor for 22 years. He wouldn't even give me a fasting insulin test a few years ago because he didn't know how to interpret it. Now he's like, you know what? He's reading the literature. He's reading and finding out and learning with me to how to manage my, he doesn't prescribe Cytomel. And now he's prescribing it. Why? Because he's a good doctor. There are good doctors out there. There are good dietitians out there.
Yeah. Yeah. There are
some good doctors sitting right here.
Well, here's the problem. The good doctors who spend time with their patients, and the good dietitians that are out there that spend time with their patients, you know, they're few and they're penalized because in both the Canadian and the American system, we're paid, you know, per visit, you know? And so that's a fundamental problem, right? We have to not seek to just bring people back. We have to, you know, focus on quality somehow and focus on improving people's lives. And I know that the two people in front of me right now are definitely working to do that. So I got to say, it's been a pleasure, Joy. Brian, it's always a pleasure. Can you, Joy, before we part ways, where can everybody go? I know you've said it three times, but say it one more time. How can people find you and where can you direct them?
Three websites are the most interesting. If you're interested in me as a dietitian or nutrition consulting that I do to people in the States, low carb, healthy fat dietitian. So it's lchf-rd.com. Or you can go to my social media and the links are there. The bread book is low carb, one word, -bread.com. And then if you want to read articles about hypothyroidism that are referenced, so you can discuss them with your doctor, bbdnutrition.com, and that's betterbydesignnutrition.com under the Food for Thought tab. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under @LCHF-RD.
Well, that's for now, you know, after you talked about thyroiditis, you know, you and Brian
maybe in the doghouse. I'm going to continue to write about thyroid and encouraging people to, if they can't get testing because of the rules, like where I live, if they have symptoms, they're allowed to get testing. So if they know what the symptoms are, they can be tested. They don't have to get as sick as I was.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice too. One other thing is with your book, do we just print each individual page if we're going to make something or?
Actually, I'm working with a publisher right now, a potential publisher, and getting out a hard copy.
And, awesome.
Because I've already sold almost 1,000 copies in 25 countries, clearly there's an interest in this book. And so I'm if it's not this publisher, it'll be another. I want to get it out in hard copy so that people can order it off Amazon and, you know.
Have it there and flip through the pages and get stuff on them.
It's good to be, like with cookbooks, you just need to be in the kitchen and accessible. So, yeah, I can't wait till that happens. Let us know when it does.
Well, it's downloadable and you can have your tablet or your smartphone in.
Save the trees.
Well, that always takes pictures of... recipes out of a cookbook and then brings them in on his phone. And so that's why I did it.
Yeah, that's what I do too. Yeah, it's perfect.
There you go. So bring it in, bring the recipe.
Flip through my tablet. We're good to go. All right. Awesome. Joy, it's so great seeing you. Thanks. I think we did better at cutting each other off this time for the most part.
Yeah, we didn't. I
see comments on the feed about how I was so rude.
No, you know what? It's funny you say that. It's like, you know, you got that feedback. I've gotten that feedback so much lately. You know, it's like incredible. You know, like stop interrupting.
We don't get ruffled with it. So I don't know why people think, you know, if we're not getting ruffled.
You know,
I think it's a thing when we have someone, we want to pick their brains as much as we can. So we know we only have a limited time. So we want to get as much information as we can as quickly as possible. So it's hard. Sometimes we get, you know, overzealous.
I think what it is we're all passionate about what we do. And we really... it's like Tro was saying, if we only cared about the 10-minute visit and what we get paid from the government, we'd all be doing that. But we're not, because we genuinely care about the health of our patients or clients, and we want to see people get well, and we want to make this lifestyle sustainable.
Yeah, and we want to lower the entry point and say, okay, if that's your stumbling block, let's try it and see how you do with that. You know, and so I think it's really good that we have these tools, and people will criticize that, but having the tool, if you don't need the tool, you throw the tool. I have tools that I don't use a lot, but if I need it, it's there.
I don't promote it with my clients because I think real whole food is preferable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You guys are just,
what do you say, Tro? Don't let perfection interfere with getting the job done or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's not progress, but not perfection.
Yeah, progress, but not perfection. And I think we're all in that boat. And, you know, we learn here and there, and we keep plugging along.
Yeah,
absolutely. Guys, this has been awesome. Thank you so much, Joy Kitty.
Thank you for
this has been great.
Again.
Dr. Brian Lenskis, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah,
always
awesome, Tro. And congrats on your new study. We got to talk about that next time. That's exciting stuff.
You know what? Maybe we'll do a recording just for that.
Yeah, we'll do that. So everyone, hey, Patreon supporters and listeners, thanks for tagging along with us. If you're hankering for some bread or pizza, then now you know how to make it in a better way. And so again, Joy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.